The WLEW News and Public Affairs Department now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
I have a couple of guests in the studio today. We have Ruth Schwendinger from the Huron Behavioral Health Organization in Bad Axe and Shelley O'Henley from the Huron County Health Department. Now, coming up a little later this month, there is a conference coming up, and it has to do with something that's on a lot of people's minds in the area. Heroin Opioid Prescription Education HOPE Conference, and we're going to be looking at, hopefully, ways to deal with the problem and help people out who are suffering through it themselves or as a family member has it. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Craig.
First of all, the conference. When is it going to be? Where is it going to be? And do people need to pre-register?
So next Thursday, March 23rd, at the Franklin Inn here in Bad Axe, that's 1070 East Huron Road, we're asking people to pre-register so we can order some food. There's going to be a light lunch provided. If people would show up before 8 o'clock, we'll get you registered, or you can call or email us at Huron Behavioral Health. The conference is going to be a full-day event from 8 to 4 p.m.
Now, who are you looking to come to this? Are you looking for people who deal with it, like law enforcement, like folks in the medical industry, hospitals? Or is it more for people who have family members in this? Is it people who are actually having problems with addiction? Or is it a little bit of all of that?
We really want to open up the conversation to everybody. This is a problem across the nation, but it's really hitting home here. We've had 5 opioid-related deaths in Huron County this year.
And it's only March.
I hear you. It's a serious issue, and not just the deaths, but it really affects work performance, family values, and how that relates to student performance. And it really does hit home in a lot of places. So this needs to be a community conversation.
And it just doesn't count the 5. There are people who overdose, survive, but they can be in a coma for a long time. They can have medical problems the rest of their lives. It affects families long term.
Absolutely. Lots of health consequences, especially that's why at the health department and public health, we deal a lot with overdoses and hopefully the education part, because later in life or maybe a first-time user can have a lot of health consequences.
And I don't know, is there a definition of addiction, or does it vary depending upon the person and their personal status at the time? Because, you know, addiction, in my mind, is someone who just can't control themselves anymore. They have to have it. There are people who may want it, people who may, you know, desire it, but then there are people who will steal, rob, do anything they can to get it, lie to family, steal from family, take pills from their grandmother just to get the drugs. I mean, it seems to me there's getting there and then full-blown there.
There is a definition for addiction, but it's something that is diagnosed on a medical basis.
So it's individual then.
Substance use disorder is a very real thing in a lot of people's lives. My family has personal experience with it. A lot of people do in the community. And it's something that nobody wants to talk about, but it affects all of us.
And another thing with addiction, it's a brain disease. So oftentimes when I'm in class with my teens, I tell them, addiction doesn't care who you are, male, female, where you come from, rich or poor, struggling, it doesn't matter. Addiction doesn't matter. It's a brain disease, and some of us might be able to overcome that, and some of us simply can't without medical attention.
Was that a hard obstacle to get over? Because there are a lot of people, if you just had enough gumption, you could take this stuff and not use it anymore. But when you say it's a brain disease, obviously there are changes that occurred in the brain that either make you more susceptible, make you want it more, and they're long-term.
Absolutely. Even in my family, we were raised with the mentality, just get over it, you'll be fine. But in the case of an addict, that's not how they operate. Like you had mentioned, they'll steal from family members. They'll steal from grandma's cupboards. Going through their mind isn't, I'm stealing from my family, it's how will I meet my addiction so I don't go through withdrawal symptoms, so I don't have to feel the way I did before I started using. So there's lots of reasons why people start using. It's just, are they getting the right medical attention, or are they misusing?
And the addiction is something that takes more and more and more to get up to the same level, which is why you get into the overdose situation and needing to steal from grandma, because basically to get you to where you were the last time takes more.
Right. It's a beautiful sunshiny day right now. And when
you
start
have a hearty
using...
constitution, because I think it's cold, but okay. We'll go with that.
when you've developed a resilience to substances in your system, you take more and more, not just to get the high that you used to get, but to feel normal, because it drains the light out of your life. It really makes everything dark. You don't care about the values that you used to hold dear. You don't care about the people. All you care about is feeding that addiction.
And it doesn't matter if we're talking prescription drugs, you know, opioids, or alcohol. It takes more. You can watch people who are addicted to alcohol, alcoholics, and they can drink so much more than a regular person and hardly show it, because it doesn't affect them until they get so much more in their system. And they can show up on the police blotter as super drunk, and if I had that much in there, I'd be in the hospital with tubes in me.
And it's important to recognize the signs of alcohol poisoning and know what to do about that. And we're talking at the schools about that this week too. But opioids are a little bit different, because you can slowly stop breathing. They affect the part of your brain that controls your regular rhythmic breathing.
The automatic functions, not just the feelings of, you know, oh, my hand's numb or whatever, but the automatic functions get impaired too.
That's right. And we're going to dig into that a little bit more, the medical effects and side effects of opioid use. And like you said, it doesn't matter if it's heroin or if it's a prescription drug. It's synthetically the same thing.
Do most people start off with, say, a prescription? You break your leg, the doctor gives you something really powerful to take care of it. It feels good. And once you're done, it's addictive and you're not easily getting off of it. Do a lot of times, maybe as families, we need to see what the people are taking in these types of situations, and maybe they don't need the full dose. Maybe you could get away with, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I had my four wisdom teeth pulled. They gave me Demerol. My mother gave me a half a pill because she said these things were really potent. I was flying around the room. And after that, it was aspirin because,
right,
you know, I couldn't handle it. Do people around you, people that care for you, are they kind of a first line in stuff like this to make sure that what you're getting isn't going to put you on that path?
In the 70s, when you think of a heroin junkie, they would have started on heroin. Nowadays, 75% or more have started on a prescription drug, legally prescribed by a doctor. The Centers for Disease Control and the Governor's Office are both working to reduce the amount of prescription drugs available to us, the dosage, the amount.
I think they canceled renewals. I mean, you have to get a new prescription on some of these every time because, you know, they just don't want to give you five refills and find out that you're using them up in 3 weeks.
Because opioids are much more highly addictive than anything like alcohol.
Yeah, the doctor definitely wants you to follow up.
And we need you to be 100% honest with your doctor about the prescriptions, the over-the-counter, the natural supplements, and the illegal substances you may be taking.
And if you've had a problem in the past, you'd need to talk to your doctor about the pain medications he's giving you so he doesn't put you back on the same road that maybe you were finally able to get off of because you, say, broke your leg or you got back problems or such. There may be other things they could prescribe that won't be as addictive that, you know, maybe for a back pain, they can go to the electronic, you know, stimulation or something that would not put you on that road again.
Right. And our Veterans Association is working to develop more pain management issues because a lot of our veterans struggle with chronic pain. And we don't want to treat chronic pain with opioids generally.
It takes care of the pain, but it can cloud the mind. And then you don't have the quality of life that you would have had otherwise. So
absolutely.
It's a trade-off for the pain. And in other ways, you're diminished.
So be very honest with your doctor, in other words. They're not there to judge you or you know, get you in trouble. They're there to help.
And don't be afraid of the doctor.
Absolutely.
Lot of people don't want to, you know, countermand what the doctor says or question it because they're your doctor. They're supposed to know what you're doing. But unless they get the input from you on your personal situation, maybe they don't know that this could be a problem and we could go another way.
They can't read between the lines. And we want to encourage people. I grew up with the saying, just say no. I want to move that from the schools to the doctor's office. It's okay to let your doctor know I'm not comfortable with that and continue the conversation. Oftentimes, the first treatment is not going to be what works for you. Get a second opinion. Get a third opinion. Keep going and asking and seeking until you find what's right for you.
And there are pain specialist clinics and such that may have other options that
Absolutely,
you could try
yeah.
too. I mean, you don't have to just, you know, say, well, maybe I should check elsewhere and then do it. There's internet. You can go out on the internet. You can find what's close and you can maybe find an alternative to the potent drugs that are going to be a problem later on in your life.
Right. But don't order drugs online. Please talk to your doctor
yes.
about it.
I
get an actual diagnosis.
I don't know that they would send those drugs to your house.
Well, if you have a mailing address and a credit card, I think it's been done.
Well,
but
that's how you end up with carfentanil in your stuff
Absolutely.
Or melamine or something else, because it's you don't know what you're getting unless you're getting it from your doctor in a prescription and a pharmacy that you can trust.
Absolutely. So talk to your doctors, be honest with them, and don't be afraid to have a continuing conversation about what's best for you.
One more thing, too. If families have prescription medications at home that are not being used, whether someone passed away or you just don't want them in your home anymore, any sheriff's department or state police post takes them back during business hours, no questions asked. So make sure. Pharmacies will do that, too. So.
And they also dispose of it
properly,
so it's not in the environment causing problems in our lakes, rivers, and such. So it's a good deal all the way around.
And you'll hear more about that coming up on April 29th. We're doing a National Drug Take Back Day, where people will properly dispose of prescription drugs, whether they're unused, unwanted, or expired.
And only used medicines prescribed to you.
Yes.
Oh, this worked for me. Here, try one of these. It's not a good prescription model to go with.
Right. There are other ways to manage stress. There are other ways to manage pain. We want to encourage people to not just pop pills.
And don't experiment with others, other people's prescription medication. It could be dangerous if it wasn't prescribed to you or the right dosage. So,
and drugs tend to interact.
Absolutely.
It could make it much more potent than it would be otherwise, or toxic. All right. Now, the conference is coming up, and who's going to be speaking there?
So on the list of speakers, we have Dr. Schisler, a local doctor. He's going to be talking about neurobiology and addiction. And hopefully we will make sure that he brings his medical terminology down to our level. That can be confusing. So I think he'll be a great speaker and asset.
And the neurological part is how it changes your brain.
Absolutely.
That makes
that
you crave it, makes you want it. You'll do anything. You'll take your grandmother's meds. She can be in pain. I don't care. I need this.
Absolutely. Yep. We also have Katie Donovan. She will share her story, A Mother's Addiction Journey, and so she's a very great speaker. Local Ryan Swartz from the Sheriff's Department, Corey Warren and Jackie Liebner, and also Blaine Adams. He will share what we can do for individuals in recovery and how we can support them in our community.
Because you want to make sure if when they come home, say they're in treatment in-house somewhere, that they come home to an environment that's not going to put them right back on the same path.
Right. We're actually working actively with the other groups and organizations in the community to tackle addiction at a three different levels. We want to prevent addiction with education, like at the conference. We want to have interventions like the naloxone training I'm also going to be talking about a little bit at the conference, and aftercare or recovery postvention. We want to really build support for people and their families who are dealing with this as part of their daily lives.
And prevention is always the best route, because you're not getting any of the medical problems, you're not getting any of the court problems that can happen from all of this, and meeting Ryan Schwartz, the officer, in a way you don't necessarily want to. And it also is better for the community, as it you're not having to deal with police doing breaking and enterings because people are needing money for their drugs. There's a whole consequence of expenses that go down the line, not just the treatment.
Domino effect, for sure.
It becomes a tailspin, and not just for you, but you drag other people down who are trying to care for you as well. And Katie Donovan is active in the Families Against Narcotics community. Her daughter has been through a heroin addiction, and she's going to come talk to us a little bit at the conference about what they've done in Macomb County and other parts of Michigan to help support not just the recovering individual, but the families as well. We're having a conversation at a group called Recovery Roundtable tomorrow at the Huron ISD to talk about what we can do to bring a Families Against Narcotics group to Huron County.
Okay. And a lot of I see our prosecutor and assistant prosecutor are going to be there putting on a presentation. They did a little short one for the commissioners, and I saw that, and that was very interesting. I'm not usually, you know, wide awake at PowerPoint things, but this was information that was eye-opening, exactly how things work and how quickly people become addicted, and the consequences down the road, obviously, when you're dealing with prosecutors.
Right. Mr. Witowski and Mr. Wallace have a really fantastic presentation that they've been working on putting together, and they really want to help us understand as a community what it looks like, how we can deal with it, what other people have done, and they're really just fantastic partners in spreading hope.
And I'm trying to remember, did you say something about maybe the judge going to be there or something, or was that something we were else, or was that the roundtable you were going to have?
We're expecting representatives from a lot of the community partners at the Recovery Roundtable tomorrow, and it's an open meeting if anybody mm-hmm. wants to join us and just hear about what's happening to support those in recovery and their families.
Because sometimes the court and the judge is their first line of getting squared away because they've hit rock bottom by the time they're in the court system. And we don't want that. It'd be much better if people could find the treatment they want. Is that difficult to find the treatment you want? Things I have heard is that there aren't always a lot of spaces available when you need help, and or they're really far away because they're not local. We're a small community. I don't think we could support a whole facility, so they probably have to go to Saginaw, Bay City, maybe Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, Sheboygan. I mean, we're talking, you know, a lot of travel here and away from home and expenses.
It is incredibly difficult, and we don't have enough resources to address the growing problems. So we are looking at the conference, at the Recovery Roundtable, with different groups to try to help develop some of those resources, not just for treatment and support afterward, but for prevention so that we can slow this problem down and get a handle on it.
And your insurance may not cover a lot of this. I mean, it depends on what you have and where you're getting it from, but still, you should check to see what they can cover to help you out. That there might be psychological services that you can benefit from. There might be inpatient that they will pay some for. I mean, you don't know until you look.
And that's the first question a lot of places ask is, what kind of insurance do you have? Because there's not a lot of help out there. You have to keep looking and keep seeking until you find what you need.
And a lot of times, you may have to go a couple of weeks before a spot opens up when somebody completes their program. And so you've got to figure out what you're going to do in the interim so you're not going there in a state that they won't even accept you.
And that's why it's critical to have a decent support system. If you don't have family, to have, you know, a support network of coworkers or, you know, your softball team or your bowling league or neighbors, church groups, somebody to help support you through that. Because when somebody gets out of an outpatient treatment center and they have to wait 2 weeks before they can get, if they get out of an inpatient treatment center and they have to wait 2 weeks before they can get in an outpatient program, the chances of relapse are shocking.
And then they have to learn to stay away from the people and the places that got them there. Because a lot of times their only network and their only friends are part of the problem.
And Blaine Adams, one of our speakers at the conference, is going to address that specifically. What does recovery look like for you? She's a trained recovery support specialist at Saginaw Psychological, and she's going to kind of walk us through the steps of how do you build a support recovery plan for an individual. And it can't just be go to meetings. It has to be schedule your life full of good things and good supports in a different environment from when you started using.
And you might find out that you're not a nerd, you're not, you're just being normal when you're not on the drugs, when you're not on the opioids and all the other things. It doesn't make you cool, it doesn't make you better, it just makes you.
And that's what we're trying to.
Half the time.
That's what we're trying to help people realize is, when they're in recovery, how do you find normal again? What do you look like without drugs? What is your life like without that? How do you have fun? How do you smile? How do you laugh again?
And that you're not alone. You're not alone in the struggle or the battle or the recovery.
And one of the biggest holes in support is, like we mentioned, finding a place to stay. And Jackie Liebner and Corey Warren are going to come talk to us about their RISE recovery program that they've started in Lansing for people in recovery, in treatment, who just don't have a place to stay. And that is a comprehensive, really good program that they've been able to fully get off the ground. I think they have 5 different locations, recovery houses now in the Lansing area.
How do you find, you can go on the internet and you can find some craziest things in the world. How do you find someplace reliable, someplace that's good? Is there a clearinghouse? Are they certified? Is there something you should be looking for in these types of places? I mean, you can, the courts obviously would know good ones. They wouldn't send you to one that wasn't reputable. But I mean, how does the average person know if they haven't gotten that far? This one in Lansing's, accredited or good. Is there a clearinghouse? Do they normally post their credentials in these types of things that you can? You don't want to make the problem worse by getting half-baked answers.
And everybody's path is different, so what's a good program for one person isn't necessarily going to be a good program for another. But on our website at HuronCMH.org, we have a listing of community resources of substance abuse treatment centers and counselors that we would recommend that people would be able to use. And there's not very many local. A lot of them you would have to travel for. But we do have that list on our website.
Well, as I understand it, Huron Behavioral Health doesn't even have a psychologist in the county, and most of it's done through teleconferencing and stuff, or they come in one day a week or something, because there's just not the population base to support all of that.
We have a psychiatrist, and she's incredibly, overscheduled. There's a huge shortage, not just of mental health professionals, but medical professionals as well in our community. And that's a whole nother conversation.
Oh, we can do another show on that.
We could.
Now, you are working on getting something up here called FAM.
Correct.
And it has nothing to do with standing around telling Britney Spears how wonderful she looks.
Very true. FAN is Families Against Narcotics. Through the recovery roundtable that Ruth mentioned earlier, we are having a guest speaker come tomorrow to our meeting to discuss what it would look like to have a Huron County FAN chapter. What does our community need in recovery? What do our families need in recovery? So the hope is to start Family Against Narcotics, to find more information, and bring another resource to Huron County.
I imagine Families Against Narcotics FAN probably has a website you can Google for the national thing, but locally it's going to take, at least a certain number of people to kind of make it fly, because, you can't have one and make it fly.
Yeah.
I mean, you need people around there so they can support each other and share their experiences and how we dealt with it. And, well, we dealt with it this way. It didn't really work. You better try something else, because the easy fix didn't make it.
And the people we really need to hear more from are those who are going through a substance use disorder, for those who have addiction issues in their families, because we need to know more about what supports are needed. We know what limited resources are out there, but we don't have enough of a representation from the recovery community itself. So at 10:15 tomorrow at the Huron ISD, walk into the admin building and say, I want to hear about Families Against Narcotics.
Is there groups around us? Does Sanilac, Tuscola have them, or are we going to be pioneering this?
The closest is at Lapeer, and they have a very awesome chapter down there. So we're kind of looking to them for some guidance and some mentorship in the future if we can get this rolling. Because it certainly takes a community to be on the board. So we have other community partners involved that the hope is that they will donate their time to this recovery option.
And as a small county, oftentimes we take programs that other counties have started that are bigger, and we have to model them down to our size to what'll work here, because the numbers we have, the resources we have, and the number of people that will actually be available to help. So it's not as easy as it sounds to just take, oh, Lapeer County, they have 5-6 times our population, but it's going to work for us exactly as they do it. We may have to gear it towards Huron County.
Absolutely.
And that's what the conversation tomorrow is going to address, is how can we make this work here?
Okay. Now, if people are going to the conference, how long is it going to run, the Hope Conference? Is it an all-day affair? You sounded like you're going to have lunch. I didn't know if that was at the end or if it's just a breather in between.
It's 8 to 4 on March 23rd, so next Friday. Thursday. Next Thursday, March 23rd, at the Franklin. It'll be all day. We'll have a light lunch provided around that noon hour. Mm-hmm. And we hope that people can come out
and
join
us. Is there a cost? Because usually with lunch, there's a cost. Do you need to make sure that you bring your wallet?
Setting aside jokes about free lunches.
Oh. We're going to go there, you know, if you're telling me it's free.
Everybody's welcome to attend.
Everybody's welcome. Okay.
There's not a cost unless you're requesting continuing education credits, because we want to have alcohol and drug counselors, social workers, prevention specialists, peer recovery mentors. We want to have them in attendance as well. So we're offering continuing education credits to those groups. However, there's no cost for anyone not requesting those continuing education hours.
Are some of these services available, groups and people going to have like tables or something in between the talks where people can go up and ask individual questions and such? Because it seems like to me this would be a perfect opportunity to make some initial contacts.
Absolutely. We're going to have, most of our community partners are going to have a table with just information out there, people you can ask questions.
Obviously, they're not going to want to get too detailed because there's a bunch of people around and you don't like your personal business to be all over the place, but you can get an idea if these people are going to help you, if their resources are something, if they do them in the evenings when you're available. You know, there's all types of logistics involved in making it work for you.
Right. Chance to Change has been one of our biggest partners in this conference and continuing this conversation going together forward as a community. They're going to have a table there. We're going to have the Thumb Regional Sobriety Court mm-hmm. in attendance, and we can learn from them the model that hopefully we're going to have a drug court modeled after in Huron County. I expect Mr. Ratowski and Mr. Wallace to talk a little bit more about that at the conference.
That is for people who have made it into the court system.
Right. We're
like,
also
like
going to have...
Like with the Thumb Sobriety Court, you get to that point, and if the judge, through the criteria, thinks you'll work and the program says you meet their criteria, it's a very intense program for the sobriety court, so I assume it'd be the same thing for the drug court.
I believe it'll be modeled in the same way. For people who haven't gotten involved in the court system yet, there's going to be information about local AA and NA groups. That's a really fantastic support network that, you know, the system that they use works. People need to be paired up with someone. They need to have a checklist of things to do. They need to have that anonymity. They need to be safe and feel comfortable enough to share their story. We are also going to involve a question-answer session in the morning and in the afternoon so that we can have those conversations so that the people gathered at the conference can hear what's actually going on, what people are really struggling with, what questions they have that we're not addressing yet.
And a place where you know everybody around you either understands, is going through it, or is there to deal with it. And there's nobody just in there, this sounds interesting, what am I going to find out?
We're not in this alone. We are doing this together as a community. And this is a strong showing of support.
Okay. How long did it take you to set up this? This does not sound like something you said, we'll do this in an hour and we'll figure out who we want there. This sounds like something that's been a while coming.
I joined Huron Behavioral Health in November. It had been on a back burner for a couple of years before I got there.
So you're the one who spearheaded it.
It's been my primary focus for the last month and a half or so.
She looks like she's trying to be modest here.
She is. She's done a ton of work on this. It's going to be a great conference. Obviously, the title's Hope, the Hope Conference. That's what we hope to bring.
And this is a scary issue, but we're facing it together. And that's the main point. We want to spread hope. Nobody's in this alone. And if you want to be a part of it, just give us a call. If you want to register for the conference so we know how much lunch to order, call 989-269-9293 or shoot me an email at ruth@huroncmh.org.
And then just show up that morning and get a lot of useful information that may help you, your family, and a particular maybe member of your family that's going through the perils and pains of all of this. But
right.
It's not just the person. The family goes through the pains, too. They just have the physical pains. The rest of the family has emotional, financial, and other types of pains they deal with, and hopefully not the ultimate pain that comes from an overdose that is not able to be saved. Now, they do have, you mentioned that you're going to be talking about it, that
naloxone.
Naloxone. That's a tongue twister if I ever heard one. And basically, this is out there now in the community. We have police officers, emergency people in the ambulances. Even some schools are getting in on this, where they have this available. And if there's an overdose, this stuff stops it.
It's an opioid blocker. It gets into the part of your brain that controls the automatic breathing, like we talked about, and it kicks it out. So naloxone is an immediate intervention if someone is overdosed. You know, if they're gurgling or turning blue in the face, you want to administer it. You know, check and see if they're responsive. Check and see if they're able to speak. If they're not, call 911, administer the drug, and start rescue breathing.
They still have the overdose. They still have the rest of it. It just allows them to breathe because the other stuff is still in their blood system. It's still going round and round and round. It just needs to be a stopgap measure to get them to a hospital so they can get the rest of the treatment they need.
So, no, it actually kicks out the opioid from the system.
It really just blocks it? It
kind of
surrounds it and it doesn't do anything anymore?
And this is depending on the amount of drug in their system, this works to just bring them back to life. And those who have seen it used can just only say it's a miracle. And it's 100% safe. If someone you think has overdosed on heroin hasn't actually overdosed on heroin, you administer it anyway. It's not going to do any damage. In addition to that, we want people to use these naloxone kits to save lives and not be afraid of getting in trouble. In October of last year, the court system passed into law, the governor signed into law, the Good Samaritan Act, which protects individuals who administer a life-saving overdose drug to someone they suspect and in good faith of having an overdose.
And it might have been something that isn't an opioid and doesn't affect it. So there you go. You tried. And a lot of times that happens. People help people on the road and, you know, they get them out of a burning car and then you're in trouble because they hurt their back when you got them out. Well, did you want to burn up or did you want to, you know, you needed the Samaritan laws there, and it works here with the anti-drug naloxone. Almost sounds like something that you could prescribe someone a little small dose of that so they can't get high.
So, and it's used
maybe
in treatment.
Maybe that's on the way. Maybe
it is
something
used
like
in
that
treatment.
Is on the way.
For people, it does. It is used in a long-term release formula for people in recovery. It works the same way. But over an extended release period, people in recovery can use it. These kits are used just for overdose.
These are intense fast.
Absolutely. Active. And you still need to call 911 just in case once that naloxone dose runs out. If there are still drugs in the system, more drugs than can be kicked out of the system by one dose of naloxone, you can get them to the hospital so they can be treated appropriately.
Because if they took pills, they could be still assimilating them.
Right.
More could be coming through as you've knocked out what's in the system, but more could be coming back. So you need to get them into a medical treatment where they can be monitored and safe and hopefully be the first step to getting them off that stuff and back to a more normal life.
Right.
But this is a lifetime thing. It's like they tell people with alcohol. You're an alcoholic for life. You're an addict for life. Your system is kind of geared to that. It'll easily go back to it, so you have to be very, very comprehensive on making sure you never get there again.
It's a life-changing step and process, and recovery is a lifelong process. No one will ever say, I'm recovered, and mean it. We're always at risk for overdose. We're always looking for people who can support us and help us to make those decisions of, I need to just stay away from that situation. Thanks for the invite, but no thanks. And naloxone, the kits are available right now for free at Huron Behavioral Health. We're doing training, and we're not just handing out drugs and overdose things, but we want to encourage people to come. It takes about half an hour to do a training, during which you'll watch a video, go through the steps of how to use it appropriately, talk a little bit about the laws, and then you'll leave with a kit.
But the person who's trained should be the one who administers it. It's kind of like the automatic defibrillators you have in buildings and such. You get training for that. It shouldn't be a layman that just grabs it and says, here we go.
Right.
You need training. You need to know how to hook it up. You need to know when to use it, when not to use it. You need to know what steps to take first. And there's a lot more to it than just simply like an EpiPen injecting it into you. You need to know where you're at before you start.
That's a really great example, Craig, because we look at it a lot like an EpiPen. It is a simple injection, and we hope nobody ever has to use it. That's why we're working with the schools and with a lot of the medical staff and a lot of the people in treatment centers to get these kits out there to people who are at risk for overdose. It's not a very complicated thing. It doesn't take long to figure out, but it is scary, and we want people to be able to get over the idea of you might have to use this to save the life of someone you love. So we want to continue to talk about recovery. We want to continue to talk about substance use disorder. We want to continue to talk about treatment options and support recovery for those who are out there who need it. We want to reduce the stigma associated with it because it's killing people. We need to talk about it so that we can make it stop.
Is it true that it's the first real step is when the person admits they have a problem? Because denial seems like it would be I have fun on the weekends with my friends, and they don't really realize how often they are using it and how long it stays in their systems and the effects it's having on them long term.
It is. And we can't put people in recovery. That has to be an individual choice. And if somebody doesn't want help, we can't make them make the different choices.
Well, then you're just wasting the space for someone who wants it.
Right.
You're putting somebody in there who's going in there, I'm not going to do this anyway, and there's so limited spaces anyway for the people who want the help. You don't want to mess them up either.
People relapse an average of 8 times before they're able to stick with recovery,
even in an inpatient program. You keep quitting until you've actually quit.
But we want to continue to encourage people to try, because the more times they try, the higher their chances are of succeeding in getting on their own path to recovery.
Are there things in their lives that help them? I often hear, you know, doing it for their children or something. You know, it's a difference between a 17-year-old and a 35-year-old man who's gone down this path for 15 years and he sees his family and he's not able to see him because he's in court and in jail and all that kind of stuff. Are there factors that as people go through life, see the damage and makes it a little easier to make the decision?
Meaningful social connections is the number one protective factor in preventing addiction, and it's the number one factor in instigating recovery.
Also sounds like it could be a factor in getting addiction by needing the people around you who are the wrong people.
It's all about the choices we make, and once you're addicted, the choices are out of your hands. People don't care about the results of their choices anymore, and they need others to point them out.
And again, it's not a nationwide problem that we have nothing to do with. It's elsewhere. It's here in Huron County. It's everywhere. And we have it just as every other small county and community in the nation. And as long as you've got a highway, there are people who will bring this stuff up and get our area hooked on it and thinking they're going to make a little money out of it and go back home to where they're at and get themselves shot up or buzzed some more too. It's a chain. It's a cycle. And the best way to stop it is for people to not start, but if they do, to get the treatment they need, and that's what these programs are for.
And for families to not turn a blind eye to it. You know, we said in the beginning, it can happen to anybody. You know, oftentimes we say, it's not going to happen to me. It won't hit our family. There's no way. But chances are, it could, and you need to be prepared. It's a community issue.
And you have to learn how to help and not be an enabler.
Exactly.
There's all kinds of things out there that people can do, and it's just enabling the problem rather than addressing it.
Right, and that's
part of what you can learn through these seminars and through the Recovery Roundtable and such, how not to do that.
Right, and we talk about addiction, and it is a national problem. It is a problem here at home. It's a little bit worse oftentimes in rural areas because people lack that connection. They lack that. They're socially isolated. There's not as many activities to do, and people feel isolated and alone. And so they form these shallow, you know, self-centered relationships online, and they're able to order whatever they want over the internet, hardly have to step outside their doors. So we really need to, as a community, be meaningful and intentional in building relationships, being supportive, and trying to be non-judgmental with this.
Is there a point where, you know, you can't start too young with your children, telling them this isn't good, this isn't going to happen, see what happened to your cousin, these types of things that, you know, because kids and peer pressure, well, you guys know it, you deal with it all the time, can really be a problem. And especially if you're trying not to look uncool and everything else around your friends, which may be the wrong circle of friends, and you don't even know it.
Right. Yeah, the first line, great line of defense would be parents talking to their children, their kids. Don't be afraid to share stories. Don't be afraid to share your peer pressure stories. And not necessarily a kids want to experiment, but they want to know what it is. What are the consequences? Why are people dying from it? You know, that needs to be an open line of communication between the parent and the child. And certainly it can be uncomfortable, but don't let that uncomfortableness, you know, not be spoken. You need to talk about it. The kids are craving education because it's in our, you know, we're hearing about it, but we're hearing about the death part of it.
And parents who talk to their kids at home about substance use, the kids are 64% less likely to try a substance on their own.
And there are resources, I'm sure, that you folks have at your departments that can give people age-appropriate things to say.
Right.
You don't want to scare a four-year-old into trauma, but you want to let them know that, you know, see what they're doing on television, this isn't good.
We still teach the difference between right and wrong, but the average age of starting a substance use is 12 years old.
Yep.
That's an average age.
Average age. So that means there's a lot younger than that.
Absolutely.
And a few older, so that's scary.
So it's not ever too early, in my opinion, to start talking about don't do drugs.
And the younger, the better. And that can just be with some simple cough syrup that the doctor prescribed for your little one. You know, it's okay to talk about it.
Who thought parenting would be that hard?
Tell us about it.
So again, you've got the Hope Conference coming up March 23rd, Franklin in Abadex, all-day event. Starts in the morning about 8:30 or 8 o'clock?
Speakers are going to start at 8. If you can show up by 7:30, you'll have a chance to look at those information tables we have set out.
And going until about 4 in the afternoon.
Yes.
You also have the Recovery Roundtable tomorrow. Are people welcome to stop in and see what you're doing?
At 10:15 at the Huron ISD, we welcome anybody who wants to participate in that conversation to bring families against narcotics to the area.
And FAN is the way it's acronymed, but it's Families Against Narcotics.
Correct.
I appreciate you ladies taking time today. I hope you get a good turnout. And again, that telephone number is 269-9293, 269-9293, if you'd like to register, or Ruth at HuronCMH.org, all small letters.
Thank you, Craig.
Yes,
thanks
thank
for being
you.
With us. And I hope, you know, if we help one person, you know,
it's worth a little miracle.
Right there. Because you know, and the hard part you people have is that you never know how many people you've stopped. Only if you have to deal with them in the aftermath. And that's I think prevention programs are terrific. It's just hard to gauge.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guests today on the program have been Ruth Schwendinger, I got that right, mm-hmm. with Huron Behavioral Health, and Shelley O'Henley from the Huron County Health Department. Again, the heroin opioid prescription education, lots of nasty words in there, coming up with Hope Conference on March 23rd, Franklin in Bad Axe. You can call 269-9293 if you'd like to register. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.